Welcome to the Hyphen Church Podcast, where faith meets the spaces in between. We're here to explore what it means to belong, to grow, and to encounter God in the midst of life's questions and complexities. Whether you're here to listen, reflect, or take a step forward, know that you're in the right place. Let's make space together for what God is doing in us and through us. Now, let's dive into today's message.
Series called Open Table. Last week, we opened up with this story that we're all so familiar with called The Good Samaritan. And we are just walking through some stories in Luke of Jesus walking along his disciples and turning upside down the idea of what hospitality and welcome look like. If we want to be called a hospitable church, if we want to be a church known for its hospitality and its welcome, then we need to learn what the biblical stance of hospitality looks like. And so we're calling this series Open Table, practicing the way of welcome. And we really want to understand how we can be people of hospitality and how we can have an open table, open hands, open heart, inviting those who we know to be outside the margins. And the lesson from the Good Samaritan was really, who knows where our help is going to come from? Who knows where those particular things are going to come from? It might even come from our enemies, the people that we never really believed in the first place. And this week, we're going to look at another story that's pretty well known in Luke. And Jesus is at the house of one of his friends, and two very different things are going on. And so if you'll join me in reading this, it'll be on the screen for you. You can read in your Bible. We'll be in Luke 10, just picking up from where we were last week, verses 38 through 42. It says, "Now as they went on their way, he entered a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him. She had a sister named Mary, who sat at Jesus' feet and listened to what he was saying. But Martha was distracted by her many tasks, so she came to him and asked, 'Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her then to help me.' But the Lord answered her, 'Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things, but few things are needed, indeed only one. Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken away from her.'" When we start to see hospitality as a performance, that's when Jesus steps in to introduce us to a new way. Imagine inviting someone to dinner, but you instead spend the whole night in the kitchen, preparing food, but never sitting, never sharing, never listening. Imagine inviting your best friend to go on a fishing trip with you, and you're both in the boat, but you never talk to one another. It's like the most important part is that you are there with them, or you've invited them, or they can share in that time with you, but you're hosting them, but did you welcome them? See, I think that many of us live our lives like this, doing for God without ever really being with God. And so hospitality becomes a show, it becomes a performance, it becomes how much can I do for someone without really understanding the connection of hospitality. Not doing for God, but being with God. Not doing for other people, but actually being with them. And in our modern world, success, we think, equals productivity. We think that if we can do more and we can check things off the to-do list, then we can just gain all the success that we need. That somehow our days are going to be great. We're going to have a good day because what we've done is we've numbered those to be productive. If we can cross things off that to-do list, then We've accomplished a lot in our day. We've been successful. And sometimes we even use to-do lists in different ways. Some people will see it's on the to-do list, so it's important. I don't want to miss it. And other people put it on the to-do list because they don't want to do it. And so they're forced to write it down so that they can try and do it. We do this even in the church. We do this in our family life. We rush to do more just to prove that we care. I wouldn't be doing all of this if I didn't care about you. I wouldn't be doing all of this if it wasn't important to me that you were here. We think hospitality means activity, but what if it actually begins with availability? You see, Martha welcomed him, but she missed him. Let's step into the text sort of as an ancient listener, how they would have heard it. So we have verse 38. Now, as they went on their way, Jesus entered a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. Now, already this is hugely surprising to us, because in a first century Jewish context, hospitality was a sacred duty, but it was almost always carried out by men, especially toward male guests. And so here Martha is the head of the household, and she welcomes Jesus herself. And we don't see this very often in the Bible. We see men, the Pharisees, the tax collectors, we see the men inviting the very important rabbi, Jesus, into dinner with him. But we do see in Acts is Lydia inviting Paul into her house. So we know that she was the head of the household. We know that this was the responsibility of the person who was the head of the household. And so Martha is the one with the responsibility of welcoming him into the house. And this is significant because Luke is showing us a woman of agency and responsibility and initiative and something that might have caught early ears as noteworthy. And Martha, in many ways, is doing exactly what the culture expected of her. She's not just preparing food. She's making room for a teacher and his entourage. Because think about this. It's not just Jesus coming into the house, but it's Jesus and his closest disciples and all the people that they're traveling with. So this could be 50, 60 people that are coming here to Martha's house. She feels, I have to prepare for this. I can't be caught unaware by the 50 or 60 people that are going to be coming into my house. This is as much about Martha as it is about Jesus. This is much about Martha's being able to host and perform the role of the man as much as it is about having Jesus in her house. She's providing what would have been understood as the righteous response to a traveling rabbi. And any ancient listener would likely have initial sympathy for Martha. Be like, yeah, I get it. I understand. She's just doing what she's supposed to do. She's only doing what is required of her. She's not going above and beyond. She's not slacking off. Martha has every right to be upset because this was the burden that was on her as the host. Mary had a sister. Mary's sister is not doing what Martha's doing. And Martha thinks that Mary ought to be up and doing the things and helping Martha with all of the tasks. And so here's the twist, really, in the story. Here's what we've already had our ears perked up because Martha's the host and she's the woman. And so what is she even doing hosting this rabbi here? But Mary's posture is even still foreign in this story. Because Mary's posture sitting at Jesus' feet, it wasn't just restful. It was the traditional position of a disciple. To sit at someone's feet was an idiom in the first century for being someone's student, their apprentice. And guess what? Yeah, again, this was male space. This was the spot for a male in the first century world. Now, Jesus crossed these boundaries all the time. Jesus was always having women at his feet, teaching them, following him along. Think about the feeding of the 5,000. The 5,000 counted only the men that were there, but that did not include the women and children who were also there learning from Jesus as he spoke. The Sermon on the Mount, the Sermon on the Hillside. Jesus has to walk up the hillside because there are people at his feet. And there's so many people there that he has to get into a higher position. This would not have been just men. This would be men and women who would have been gathered there on the hillside. So ancient hearers would have found Mary's actions really socially inappropriate, almost scandalous, but this is what Jesus has been doing. He's crossing boundaries, and she's acting like a rabbinical student, not like a woman hosting a guest, and so she's crossing the boundaries as well, not just within the home, but really within those gendered expectations of the religious world. And so, meanwhile, Martha's doing everything right, except for one thing. She's really misjudged what Jesus actually wants. It says in verse 40, but Martha was distracted by her many tasks, so she came to him and asked, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her then to help me. This feels entitled a little bit. Like, Jesus, control this woman. Jesus, tell this woman what to do. Do you not care that I'm working for you? Do you not care that these things are being done? Do you not care that I'm hosting you and this is what it goes into hosting? But she feels also very justified in asking Jesus that question. Because in this first century mindset, she's not just frustrated, but she's appealing to the guest of honor to sort of restore order to the house. It's like, this is the party for you. We're hosting you, and things are amiss. Things are not right. And God, Jesus, you need to put them right. She wants Jesus to correct Mary and affirm the traditional roles that are going into this. She expects the rabbi to side with the servant, but Jesus doesn't do that. He flips the script once again. Jesus does the unexpected. Martha, Martha, you're worried and distracted by many things. Only a few things are needed. Indeed, only one thing. And Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken away from her. And so Mary, by contrast, sits at Jesus' feet, a posture of attentiveness and discipleship. And she has chosen the better portion. And Jesus commends her for it. He says, this is the better part. This is what we should be striving for. This is the one thing that is needed today. Jesus affirms Mary's choice not just to be present, but to learn and to listen and to be formed by his word. This is radical. To a first century listener, this would have sounded like a subversion of the hierarchy. Women aren't just hosts, they're disciples. Being with Jesus takes precedence over traditional duties, even good ones. Martha's, again, let's be very careful about this. Martha is not rebuked for her serving. So the problem here is not serving. The problem here is not listening at the feet of Jesus. The problem is letting service distract her from presence. Jesus is not diminishing Martha's work. He's inviting her to receive, not just provide. And Martha thinks her job as host is just to provide, is to give and give and give. And Jesus is saying, no, while I'm here, sit and listen and be in my presence, because being in my presence is the most important thing that we need. And in fact, we might even say that the truth of this passage is that the better portion is presence. I think that's the whole heart of this passage. I think that's the place where this ancient story interacts with our modern world. I think that hospitality always starts with this question. Is there room? And I think for most of us today, the issue isn't the lack of love. It's not the lack of wanting to provide. It's not the lack of initiative. It's not the lack of hosting ability. I think for us today, the issue is lack of space. Our chairs are filled, our schedules are packed, our minds are cluttered. And so when we welcome Jesus into our homes and our churches and even our hearts, we don't sit down with him. We're so distracted by the things around us, by the clutter, by the things that are on our to-do lists, the things that we feel like we have to check off in order to be productive on the day. We run around the kitchen of our lives convinced that if we can just keep the plates spinning, then maybe Jesus will be pleased with our actions. Then maybe Jesus will be able to accept us. You're worried and distracted by many things. That word distracted comes from a Greek verb that means to be pulled away, to be dragged about. Martha isn't condemned and rebuked for serving. She's drowning in serving. She's overwhelmed by it. She's caused it to be a moment of anxiety in her heart because she can't find her way out of it. She thinks it's her only role and it's her whole identity. And if she can't serve, then what is she to do? She's being pulled away from the very guest that she invited. And I think this is where our modern distractions take us. When doing for Jesus replaces being with Jesus. Because let's be honest, we are Marthas. We're Marthas in this story. We're not Marys. We're not bad, we're just busy. Modern life is structured around doing. Productivity is idolized, and hustle is glamorized, and busyness is spiritualized, and we feel guilty for sitting still. We have to schedule in Sabbaths. We have to schedule in day of rests, because otherwise we'll just work through. And people wear workaholic as a badge of honor. Oh, I worked 55 hours this week. Oh, I haven't had a vacation since 1962. We think we have to earn presence by performance. And this isn't just in the church. This is in parenting and marriage and ministry and friendships. And people aren't looking for grand gestures. And if they are, then maybe they're in it for the wrong thing. But when we call people our friends, they're not looking for something big. They're looking for our presence. They want to be with us. They want to be known by us. They want to be close to us. And when we try and make it into a production, when we try and make it into a thing that it's not, we feel like we must produce connections by controlling the environment, by managing the moment, by fixing the flaws, by making everything perfect. And we are doing the opposite of what we've been called to do. As friends and disciples of Christ and believers of God. As spouses, and really it exhausts us. That's why we head to burnout for so often, is because we are so overwhelmed with the production and we don't take a moment for the presence. Whether this is with Christ or whether this is with our friends, everything has to be about what can we do next? What can we do? What can we do? What can we do? Not what can we be, not who can we be with. That changes us. That changes the conversation. That changes what we're about. Because here's what Jesus actually wants from us. Martha thought Jesus needed food and what he wanted was fellowship. And we often give Jesus what we think he wants, good works, activity, performance, but the greatest act of hospitality we can offer to Jesus and to others is our attention. Let me say that again. Our greatest act of hospitality we can offer to Jesus and to others is our attention. Because here's the truth. Jesus doesn't need your perfection. He wants your presence. He's not waiting for you to get the house perfect. He's not measuring your productivity. He's not evaluating your worth based on your work. He's not sitting in the living room of your life waiting for a meal, but he's waiting for you. And when Mary sits down, when she claims her place as a disciple, Jesus said, she has chosen the better portion. She's chosen the better part. Notice what he doesn't say. He doesn't say Martha's portion is bad. He doesn't say Mary is better than Martha. He says that this posture of listening, this willingness to stop and be still, this giving our attention to another person is what's needed. And you can go to church every week and never make eye contact with Jesus. You can read your Bible every morning and never really sit down with the Lord. And you can serve your spouse, you can parent your kids, you can lead your team, and still not offer them presence. Because we all miss the point. We all miss the moment of understanding what it is that someone needs from us. We're experts at hosting Jesus and strangers really to welcoming him. So what is the better portion? What does that phrase mean? Jesus uses it here. There's an echo from the Old Testament. The portion is kind of like your inheritance. In the Hebrew scriptures, the word portion was often used to describe land allotments in the promised land or one's inheritance or destiny. Think of Psalm 16:5. You, Lord, are my portion and my cup. Psalm 73. God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. So when Jesus uses this word, he's not just using metaphor. He's invoking a tradition of inheritance, an identity, what truly sustains a person. Mary hadn't just chosen a good option. She claimed what truly satisfies and what truly lasts. She claimed God himself as her portion by sitting at Jesus' feet. And so for us, what does it mean to choose the better portion? What does that mean, the better part? It really means to prioritize presence over performance. Not just doing spiritual things, but being with God. And that's a really important point. Because a lot of times we think in our lives, we have to do spiritual things in order to be with God. That in order to be with God, there has to be these spiritual moments, these doings that go on. But remember, his burden is light. His yoke is easy. And so Jesus isn't calling us to do a bunch of spiritual things, but just to be with him. That requires no performance. It requires no acting. It requires us to sit in the truth of who we are and who Christ is. It's sitting still when everything in us wants to prove and produce or perfect. It means sitting still and in silence and in Sabbath and rest when everything in us wants to jump up and clean or jump up and get busy with something. It's remembering that Jesus wants communion with you, not just productivity from you. I think that the better portion for us also means making space in our cluttered life. In a world of phones and meetings and news feeds and noise, the better portion is often quiet, undistracted time with God. It's really carving out space in your mind, your day, your attention for the one who actually satisfies. And I think that choosing the better portion for us can also mean choosing the eternal over the temporary. Everything Martha is doing will fade. The end of verse 42 says, which will not be taken away from her. Because what Mary receives, the presence of Jesus, the word of life, the knowledge of God, that's eternal. Choose the better portion today is to invest in what lasts. Time in the word, stillness in prayer, depth in relationships, openness to the spirit. In a culture that feeds on distraction, anxiety, and performance, the better portion is a quiet moment of undivided attention. A refusal to define your value by your usefulness. An invitation to rest in the presence of the one who already delights in you. And this is what Mary chose. And it must be said, Mary chose this not because she was lazy, not because she didn't want to work, but because she recognized what Jesus wanted most, and it's still what he wants. You. Your presence. Have you left space for Jesus to sit in your day, in your mind, in your soul? Or is the room too busy? So how can we do this? How can we make space in our lives for the better portion? How can we become people who very easily give up distractions, very easily make intentional space for Jesus? Well, I think the first thing we need to do is we need to name the distractions. Verse 41 says, you are worried and distracted by many things. In the world of medicine, if you can name it, you can start to cure it. You can't heal something that's wrong with you until you actually are able to name the thing that's wrong with you. And so you need to start naming the distractions in your world. You need to ask yourself, what are my many things? What are the many things in my life that cause me to be distracted when Jesus is in front of me? What are the many things that are tearing my time away from Jesus? That are making me sit in guilt because I haven't truly seen Jesus? What keeps you from sitting down, both literally and spiritually? The second thing that we need to do in order to start choosing the better portion is we need to shift from doing for Jesus to being with Jesus. Martha's serving wasn't wrong. It was just out of order. I see, we can serve people better after we've been with Jesus. After we've sat at his feet and taken in all that he has to offer us and all the things that he wants to talk to us about and the things that we share about his will and what we see in the world and the things of our hearts and the things of his heart, we serve other people better after we've been with Jesus. And so Martha wasn't wrong to serve, she just did it out of order. That we want to always be thinking first about how can I be with Christ and then be with his people? How can I get myself in front of Christ and sit in his presence so that I can sit in the presence of other people better and more effectively? The third thing that we can do is we need to create an empty chair. We need to create those empty chairs around the table. We need to pretend like we were waiting for people to show up all along. We need to, whether it's a literal or symbolic making room, we need to somehow find undistracted presence with God. a physical chair in your home, a moment of pause in your routine, 5 minutes of listening prayer where you just don't talk and you're silent. You know, this church is not one for counting people. Growth is important, yes, but our emphasis is not in growing numbers, but in growing people. And there's a difference in that, and there's a difference in the way that we talk about it and the way that we think about it. And so one of the ways that I want us to try and grow is to start to create empty chairs for presence in our lives. And so instead of inviting people to church, instead of counting how many invitations we've given out or how many people have shown up and tried out the church for the first time, the thing that we want to do is we want to do one-on-one meetings. In fact, today, this morning, we are starting a brand new vision initiative here at Hyphen. I'm calling it 100 one-on-ones. Because over the next year, I want us as a church to have 100 one-on-one meetings with people in our lives. Now, this could be people in the church, people that you don't know in the church, people that you've never talked to, people that you have talked to quite a bit and want to get to know better, people that you've never talked to that you would want to get to know better. It can be people outside the church. It could be your neighbors. It could be people that you've just met for the first time. It could be people in your bowling league. It could be people in your golf league. It could be anyone, anywhere. I want us together as a church to make a better intentional effort at getting together with one another, one-on-one. You can go for coffee, you can go for lunch, you can go for dinner, you can go for breakfast. You don't have to have people over to your house. You can go out and do something. You can go shopping downtown. You can go and sit in the park. You can go to a classic car show. Whatever it is that you two find to do, go and do something. Make intentional space for the people around you. 100 one-on-ones. We want to do 100 of them as a church in a year. Miranda and I already have our first two scheduled this week. And we're going to find the time to continue doing it throughout the year. And we want to come together and see what this is doing to us. We want to come together and see how this is changing us. Learning to be present with other people. Learning to give our attention to other people. Even when we're distracted, and especially when we're distracted, because that makes it even more valuable to the other person. Church should cost us something. We're so distracted when we come to church, and we're always complaining that church is too long, or the pastor has talked too much, or there's too many of this and too many of that. We read too many Bible scriptures. We do too many prayers. Where else are you going to do that? That's a heart issue here. This is a heart issue where we're starting to say, there's something more important to me than being at church and being present with God. There's something more important to me than getting to know the people in this church one-on-one. There's something more important to me than sitting with my family in their presence. There's something more important. And we want to eliminate those things. We want to eliminate those distractions. We want to eliminate those many things, as Jesus called them. How can we listen and engage more intentionally with the people around us? So, the better portion is not found in what we make, it's in what we receive. When we sit down with Jesus, we discover that what we were trying to do is what he is trying to do for us, which is serve. And all we have to do is be present. All we have to do is listen and receive that. What would change in your life if you believed that Jesus doesn't want perfection? He just wants you. Can you imagine your life differently? If instead of chasing perfection, instead of chasing all of these things that we think we have to do in order to seem spiritual or in order to be seen with Jesus or in order to make it worthwhile that Jesus sits down with us? Imagine if we just started to live our lives as if Jesus wants us to be there with him. And how does that change our lives if we do the same thing for the people around us? How does that change lives if we look at the people around us and we say, I want to be with you? No distractions, no perfection, just you present with me.